Sun's Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings, Voice of America listeners. I'm Mukbil Yabro, and I'll be filling in for Sunny today. Let's get into the September 26th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Starting off with African athletics, World Cup record holders Tigist Asafa of Ethiopia and Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya celebrated big victory Sunday at the Berlin Marathon in Germany. Asafa smashed the women's world record, clocking 2 hours, 11 minutes, and 53 seconds. Her time was more than 2 minutes faster than the previous record. And Kipchoge won his fifth Berlin men's title with a time of 2 hours, 2 minutes, and 42 seconds. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Kipchoge after the race. Here's Andy.
Eliud, it's been quite a day in the marathon. For you, a record fifth win in Berlin, and of course, an extraordinary women's world record as well. You mentioned shortly after the race about you always learn something from a race. Is that something you actively do? You say, I'm going to have a period sitting down and maybe on your own or talking with others. Maybe after you have your kind of month of recovery, do you set aside time for digesting those lessons?
Yes. Sport is about enjoying, and the only way to enjoy is to accept the outcome. And I'm going to take off to and actually hold it what has happened, that's been happening for the last 4 months in the race, before I pick up again for the next season. So it's a big time thing with the management, with the technical team, share with the whole team and move on.
Also, I thought it was very interesting. You mentioned that in your first Berlin win, first of the five, you felt that athletics and marathon running was much more of an individual sport, because we think of all athletes as individuals. But now you're in the forefront of saying it's really teamwork.
It's really a teamwork. When I was here for the first time, it was still individual, but now it's teamwork. I'm managed by the team. I'm inside the team called an running team. And, that's where the world is going. Marathons will be actually team events. And I trust this will be translated to something else in future.
Of course, there must be pressure on you. You know, you are who you are, double Olympic champion, hoping to win a record third. But it interests me, when you talk about teamwork, I wonder, I'm not trying to say it takes pressure off you, but it's a bit like saying we're all pulling together, like on a boat rowing, rather than it's just one person and there's only one set of oars. Is it a different kind of pressure because it's very much a collective effort?
Pressure will be actually shared by all of us. We share pressure. I have pressure in my shoulders, but to share with the whole team, because we are a team. We speak one language. We see things with true eyes and hear things with true ears and move on.
There's been so much to digest today from the Berlin Marathon, for not just for you and the other elite runners, but also members of the press. I mean, have you had time to think of what an extraordinary women's record it was? Because we're talking amongst ourselves and saying, well, breaking 2:12, 40 years ago, a man was a pretty good international runner if he broke 2:12. And now we have Tigist Asafa, 2:11:53. How extraordinary do you think that is?
I always say no human is limited. And that's why women are not limited at all. That's why 2:11 is now a world record.
And do you think, well, obviously, she's very talented, made big improvements. But there are other talented women around. Is also, you think there's like a psychological barrier, like breaking the four-minute mile all those years ago, that other women think, well, I've raced her, I can do it. We're going to see more of those times.
Absolutely. Asafa has shown them the way. And I trust most of them will change, their mentality of thinking that it's fast. Now that they will come to reality, they had to think and they had to try to break the world record. So it's the ball is on their side. And it will no longer be just a story. These actions, which has occurred some hours ago.
You know, I was one of many journalists seeing you win the 5,000 metres in Paris 20 years ago. I wonder, when you were starting out in school as a young runner, I mean, the idea of winning one Olympic title, world titles, let alone the possibility of winning three, I mean, did you have those dreams, or has it been a gradual thing? Well, I've got to one stage, I could go to another.
I do not have any dream at all, but, you know, we are growing every day. The years are growing, you are growing older, you are growing more wiser. We have people to interact, people to exchange the ideas. You get a lot of knowledge, and that's where we are now. So it's as the time goes, you get more ideas, you get more interested in something to try.
Just one last question. We're talking Sunday evening, the day of your race. On Wednesday, you're going to be back in Vienna, a very historic place for you, and it's where you did the going under 2 hours in that special effort. Are you going to have special memories when you come out of Vienna Airport and you visit the scene of that achievement?
I think it will be fresh again in my mind. I think it's my first time to visit after breaking the 2 hour barrier. I think it will be a huge thing for me to be there. I think it will be really challenging, and I'm looking forward. I think it will locally ignite what happened in 2019. But I will be happy, I will be enjoying now. You know, at that time I was more focused, more tense to run, but now it's just taking myself there and see what has happened.
Thank you, Elliot.
Thank you.
That was Andy Edwards speaking with Eliud Kipchoge, keeping up with the other World Cup record holder, Tigist Assafa. As we mentioned earlier, she broke the record by over 2 minutes, and she was sporting Adidas's newest running shoe while she did it. Those same shoes go on sale today at $500 a pair. This is about $225 more than the rival Nike Alpha Fly 2s. The question will be whether her stunning win can sway amateur runnings to want to be like Tigist. Adidas has said that the shoe is meant for performance and not durability, and said runners should use a new pair for every marathon. That is quite a price point per race, but we will see if this becomes the go-to shoe for runners worldwide. Now swinging to the basketball court in African men's basketball, FIBA Africa Zone 3 says it will provide technical and administrative support to teams in its zone that compete in Season 4 of the Basketball Africa League. For more details, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3, Colonel Sam Amadou.
Following the FIBA Africa Zone 3 elections held in the middle of June in Maputo, FIBA Africa Zone 3 has set in motion its program of activities for 2023 to 2027 term of office. Primarily, we have started with setting up the structure for the administration of the zone. You know, it's not a one-man show. So what we have done is to set up our councils. The heads of our councils mostly are national federation presidents, where they are very effective, where they have the pedigree. And not only that, some other non-federation presidents that have distinguished themselves have also been appointed as committee heads. This will form the zone board. We have also formed the council memberships, whereby each head of council will work with some people across the zone to develop their own programs, to advise the zone board on the way forward. This was concluded, and now we are on to the next phase. I want to assure you that very capable hands, even including yourself, Mike Mboye, has been appointed to serve on the Zone 3 Media Council. This is a recognition of your role, of the contributions that you have brought to the communications aspect in FIBA Africa Zone 3. We have people across Africa in technical, in youth development. So that is the first part that we have done. And this list will be released in a few days. Not only that, our next program is BAL. That is the road to BAL. Our only representative is Elan Sportive of Cotonou in Benin, because the Nigerian representative and the Ivory Coast representative have actually qualified for the next round. Ivory Coast will host the Sweet 16, and thereafter, if they qualify, and I expect them to qualify, they and Nigeria will be playing in the conference playoffs. So I believe that we will qualify. Not only that, we also have the African Women's League, which will take place in October. And so there are so many programs. And I can assure you that we are up to the task this time around. We are hitting the ground running.
Do you have plans to assist or support basketball teams in the FIBA Africa Zone 3 as they prepare for the Basketball Africa League Season 4?
Yes, we have plans to assist the teams that are representing the zone in BAL. Like I said, only a land or team registered for BAL, so we will give them technical support and other administrative support. We have always supported our teams. So we will get the scouting reports of their opponents to assist them, and I believe that will also put them in very good state. Elan have been participating in the past 3 years, and they have been doing well.
As the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3, what's your assessment of the development of the game of basketball in the zone under your jurisdiction?
Assessing the development of basketball in FIBA Africa Zone 3, there are so much to talk about. First, Nigeria and Cote d'Ivoire from Zone 3 are among the top 5 teams in Africa. That is our national team level. Not to let you know that apart from the FIBA Africa headquarters being domiciled in Abidjan, Ivory Coast and Nigeria are part of the top countries in the entire African basketball. Going further, what we have done so far is the development for facilities. Basketball facilities continue to spring up across the zone. You will recollect that Mohammed, the owner of Mohit, built a standard indoor hall in Abuja. Ghana Basketball Federation are also in possession of a standardized indoor hall. And the zone has been collaborating with people like the Giants of Africa under Masai Ujiri, who has been building synthetic courts across the zone. He has built some in Nigeria, he has built in Ghana, he has built in Benin, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, and all around. So we have concentrated on development of facilities. Not only that, majority of the camps in Africa take place within FIBA Africa Zone 3. So many aficionados in Nigeria have been organizing camps. Go to Benin, you also see a lot of camps in Cote d'Ivoire, in Ghana, in Burkina Faso. I'm mentioning all these countries one by one so that we can see the spread. Camps in Cote d'Ivoire, Patricia Lorogner does the partner camp. The Federation also does their own camp. And so there has been a lot of development. So we will go ahead to now build more, organize more tournaments.
Let's jump into the water for this next one. The 2023 World Rowing Masters Regatta ended Sunday in South Africa. It marked the first time the Global World Rowing Federation held a competition in Africa. Mayors de Klerk tells us more from Rodeplant Dam, South Africa.
South African gold medalist rower John Smith, who qualified earlier this month for the 2024 Paris Games, participated in the World Rowing Masters Regatta at Rodeplant Dam this weekend.
Rodeplant's always been the foundation for rowing. It's been the facilities we've used for my whole career, and all the top rows have rowed here. They've now upgraded the facilities, and that's huge for us.
Local master rowing legend, 93-year-old John Price of Rodeplaat Rowing Club, was the oldest African participant at the regatta. His clubmates and family offered support as he competed in a heavy crosswind in the 89-year and older categories.
I'd kept up with the 80-year-old for a long way. and it's only towards the end they pulled away from me.
Yep.
But and the other 90-year-olds were maybe way behind, of course. Certainly, as 90-year-olds go, I'm the world champion, I suppose.
More than 1,000 athletes and their support crews from 46 countries, including four African nations, competed. Olympian Sizwe Ndlovu, who became the first African male to win an Olympic gold medal in the sport at the London 2012 Games, joined up with teammates of the Old Eds Boat Club, where his rowing career started in high school. Ndlovu, now the head rowing coach at the University of Johannesburg, said South Africa hosting the world event will benefit rowing in the future.
To have this kind of event in our country, it's good. And we've got a lot of spectators that came through today. And I think people will forever be talking about this world rowing masters. And so it will get into the next generation that's obviously coming through. So it's exciting. I think it's a good thing for the sport.
Organisers ensured all professional and technical standards were achieved in hosting the first World Rowing Masters Regatta on the continent of Africa. World Rowing Executive Committee member Patrick Rumbau says that although competing is important, the World Rowing Masters Regatta events are also about an atmosphere of fun, friendship and camaraderie.
No complaint, I had some contacts with participants and jury members, and they are very pleased with what they find. So that's not different as somewhere else in the world.
Next year, the 2024 World Rowing Masters Regatta will be held in Brandenburg, Germany. Marisa de Klerk for VOA News, Roodepoortdam, South Africa.
Lastly, making our way to the football pitch, my colleague Kali Abdu and I discussed the UEFA Champions League matches last week and the games coming up. We also took a look at the teams to watch in the English Premiership. Let's take a listen. On today's segment of the Sunny Side of Sports, we have with us our esteemed colleague, sports analyst, Mr. Kali Abdu. Kali, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure. So let's jump right into it, man. Let's talk about last week's Champions League matches. Any teams that stood out to you in their play?
Yeah, I mean, you have the Bayern Munich Manchester United game that produced 7 goals. Bayern controlled the game throughout, but Manchester United came very close to tying the game, putting in 3 goals very late in the game. So that was a very interesting game. Of course, Arsenal, you know, pumping 4 goals against PSV. And, you know, the usual suspects like Manchester City doing the business. PSG beat Dortmund, which was impressive because that group is, you know, more than likely the group of death. But then, you know, Real Madrid kind of struggled a little bit. And Inter Milan, who were in the final last year, also struggled against Sociedad. So those are the games that stood out for me. Also, Napoli are kind of struggling in their league.
So sometimes just because you see a certain team and you're expecting a certain play from them doesn't necessarily mean that it'll happen. As you mentioned, Real struggled, yeah, you know, yeah, still managed to pull it off with Jude's goal
right,
late.
Right.
But I want to talk about PSG. This is a team that had Messi, World Cup winner Messi, Neymar, you know, one of the brightest stars in football, alongside Kylian Mbappe, arguably one of the best players in the world right now. They couldn't get it right with those three men in that team. And all of a sudden now, having lost Messi and Neymar, does it seem like this team is finally coming to their own? They had a great pickup in Dembele, who Barcelona fans would argue was not great for them. Seems like he's working for PSG. What are your thoughts on this team now?
Yeah, first of all, PSG, I would say credit to them for getting Luis Enrique, because they're playing some good football right now. I mean, if you look at the stats, they had 69% possession on Dortmund, 69% to 31. So, and Dortmund aren't a poor team by any stretch. So it means that something is working. I mean, they were able to keep Kylian Mbappe, you know, get him on side. He scored a goal in that game. And, you know, like you say, Dembele is doing well. The manager has shouted him out recently, just said people should, you know, lay off him a little bit, you know, trying to ease the pressure off of him just to allow him to do his thing. He says he's a magical player. So, you know, I guess the best is yet to come from him. I would say one of the things I'm impressed with is the fact that, like you say, they've lost these huge stars. And you would think with the issues with Mbappe, that might affect them, but it doesn't seem to be affecting them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have liked the play from Ashraf Hakimi as well, having scored in that game. And I believe he also scored a free kick this weekend as well. So he's coming into form, you know, being a defender, but he really plays all the way up. Very interesting player, as we all know, Moroccan star, you know, really came into fruition during the World Cup. But yeah, so if we're going to keep with the Champions League talk, Manchester United, right? Yeah. Manchester United is having a very interesting year.
Yeah.
You know, in the English Premiership,
right,
and the Champions League as well. They're just trying to figure it out. You know, this is one of the most beloved teams, football teams, right, in the world, with a huge fan base. You know, what are your thoughts on what's happening with them as an organization?
It's very strange. I mean, since Sir Alex Ferguson left, they've struggled in different ways, and I think that ultimately, you have to question, you know, the management upstairs, outside of the pitch. You know, you think about the caliber of managers they brought through. They brought to Louis van Gaal. They brought to Mourinho. They brought through Moyes. All three of these managers have won something, either with Man U or when they left Man U. So they're not bad managers at all.
Right.
And, you know, now you have Ten Hag. They had Solskjaer. You know, and now you have, they had Ralph from Germany, and then now you have Ten Hag. That's almost seven managers since Ferguson left. So, you know, you wonder, are they struggling on the pitch, or are they struggling because of the, you know, some of the issues that they have at admin level? Their transfers are very questionable. They've been questionable since Sir Alex Ferguson left. And as you can see with Sancho, you have a very good player, Sancho, and there's issues. He's not playing. They have the Brazilian Anthony issues. The point is it seems to me like Manchester United has enough players to be able to do something. Rashford, Sancho, very talented attacking players. And now the new striker, Holland, it's not bad. You know, you have experienced players like Casemiro, you have Eriksen, but it's just not, it doesn't seem to be working, to the point where you start having fans question a manager of Ten Hag's caliber and wondering, is he good enough for them?
I think these are all valid questions. You could make the argument that team like Chelsea's having relatively the same struggles, if not worse, actually. Kind of staying on the same topic, the thoughts on all of these different trophies and these different cups that they play, right, on a yearly basis. When you're an EPL team, you're playing FA, Caribou Cup, you know, Champs League for those that are playing Champs, Europa for those that are playing Europa. What are your thoughts on the level of exhaustion that this does to teams?
So the depth of your squad is very important, right? So City can afford to go for every tournament because their B and C teams are on par with an A team from another team in the Premier League. So it's like, you know, they have those God-level players just across the spectrum in their team, whereas a team like West Ham, last season playing in the Europa Conference League, you know, went all the way to win it, they had to really manage their squad like that because they couldn't play a Premier League game with their A squad and then go, you know, next week and play in Europe with the same squad. They had to really juggle. So credit to Moyes for figuring it out. But you have a team like Brighton right now. You have a team like Newcastle, Aston Villa. These teams are in Europe. And Aston Villa has a manager who is European royalty. He knows how to win these European tournaments, Unai Emery. However, it doesn't matter how good he is if he doesn't have that squad depth and the injuries start to pile on. Because remember, injuries start to happen when you're playing too many games and your muscles aren't really getting that rest and recovery. and you're just aggravating, and then injuries start to happen. So, you know, hopefully they have enough of a squad to manage it, you know. Brighton, Newcastle, Aston Villa. So we'll see what happens with them.
No, that's a very good point. As it pertains to injuries, my team, as you all know, Arsenal, has had some devastating injuries already early on in the season. Because of the depth that we have, we're able to kind of stay afloat. Right. If this were last season, I think we'd be in very big trouble. But it's still scary that it's this early on and we're still having injury issues. Mm. Martinelli, Rice, Trossard is out, Partey is out. Mm. Like, it's bad.
Yeah, speaking of injuries, I was reading some analysis. Somebody was pointing out, I think it might have been Peter Schmeichel, after the Man U Bayern game last week, he was analyzing the level of injuries just across the leagues.
Right.
And he was baffled by it. He says he doesn't understand why there's so many injuries across the board, different leagues.
Yeah.
And he was curious if the World Cup is still, if there's still an effect from the Qatar World Cup.
For the World Cup, it definitely is a possibility. But I also think that, to me, it's so many different things, man. The level that individuals are expected to play at, the games being relatively close back to backs, like, I've never seen a time like this where there's been this many injuries.
To your point, I wanted to know, even for myself, I was thinking about this. I know that going to the gym is part and parcel of today's game, whereas in the 90s it wasn't that huge. And then I think about players like Messi doesn't spend that much time in the gym. And then I contrast him with somebody like Renato Sanchez, who plays right now for AS Roma. He played for Bayern Munich, played for Swansea, played for PSG, and in all those clubs, he literally plays one game
and he's hurt.
Injured.
Right.
And somebody was analyzing it, and they said it's because he grew up going to the gym. At a very young age, he was building too much muscle. And now the muscles are so stiff that any little run, he stretches it, it breaks. It's not very elastic. Because when he was young, they made the wrong move, like send him to the gym to bulk up. And that's affecting him now. So I wonder if, you know, you think about the Spanish game, the classic Spanish game with Iniesta, Xavi, Busquets, Messi.
None of these guys were athletic. Players. Yeah, they're not really athletic guys. And honestly speaking, I think the players that are naturally built, naturally strong, that never really lifted. You got a guy like the original Ronaldo,
R9,
which is naturally strong, but he really wasn't in the gym like that. And then you have players now that, because of the fact that you see a guy like Kyle Walker, you can tell 100% that's gym made. It's not natural. I mean, not to say that there's anything wrong with going to the gym, but it's like, if Kyle Walker was not in the gym and not training and just running and playing football, he would not be the specimen that he is today. And it's from the hard work that he's put into, which is very respectable, but that's where the game is today, where in order to compete, you have to constantly be doing plyometrics, working on your muscle mass, working on your speed, your explosiveness, from the gym perspective, as much as you're doing skills training as well. Whereas before, it was just
all about the skills training,
going to pitch. Man City is at the top. Which one of these teams do you think has the actual potential to dethrone them?
I think still Arsenal is right there, because Arsenal have improved from last year. So if they were second, you have to keep them there. Just based on that. And then you have Liverpool, who have improved as well, and they haven't lost a game. I'm just going to go the standings. And then you have Tottenham, who look fearless. They've tied one game and won everything else. And, of course, you know, Brighton are punching above their weight, you know, based on history. But they're playing really well, and they're making a name for themselves. And Newcastle, Man United, these are teams. Newcastle, you know, was in the top four last season, so we have to mention them, even though they're not doing well. And Man U is Man U. And then lastly, Chelsea. You know, Chelsea are not doing well at all. But, you know, you look at it as a marathon and say maybe
it'll even out
and these guys will come back at some point.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
So I would say Arsenal, Liverpool, Tottenham are the teams that I think can give City a run for their money.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being on the show with us today, Kali. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap for the 26th edition of the show. Hope you all have a great Tuesday. I'm Muckbill Yabaro in Washington, in for Sonny Young. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.